10:30 docket. Donahue versus Polaris Industries. If the clerk will please announce counsel. All right, gentlemen, welcome. All right, Mr. Durham.
Good morning, you may please the court. I am Leighton Durham here for Robert Donahue, and I'd like to start this morning, if I could, by making your job a little bit easier. I want to talk about the Section 390 claim. There is really no articulable distinction between Section 390 and negligent entrustment. This is a negligent entrustment case, and it turns on, it does have a bit of a wrinkle in that the entrustment was to a business as opposed to an individual, but resolution of this case turns on three primary issues. One, whether the elements are met, whether there's some evidence of the elements, whether the jury could reasonably find that this accident-producing injury was a foreseeable consequence of the entrustment, and then whether the claim is barred by the inherent risk doctrine. I think that as I go through this, you'll see that there is a fact issue on each one of these and that the inherent risk doctrine does not apply. First of all, I think it's important on the elements to establish which is the relevant entrustment. There seems to be some confusion. Is it the entrustment of Polaris to Bomb Squad or from Bomb Squad to Donahue? And in the negligent entrustment case, you have to look at this from the perspective of the defendant. We are arguing that Polaris was negligent in making the entrustment, and that is the entrustment that you are going to have to decide whether or not there's some evidence was negligent. So we will talk whether or not there was a sufficient nexus between that entrustment and the ultimate injury occurring event, which would be the accident. But when you're looking at the elements, the issue is whether or not Polaris was negligent. That's the only thing they've done that could be negligent. So that's what you have to decide was negligent. So if you take that, then you start looking at the elements. The first three really aren't really in much dispute. Polaris owned the vehicle, and Polaris entrusted it to Bomb Squad. That's really not in dispute. That also really negates Polaris's control argument, because at that point of entrustment, Polaris was clearly in control of the vehicle. It owned the vehicle when it entrusted it. The second and third elements, again, really aren't much in dispute, which is, was the entrustee reckless, and did Polaris know that the entrustee would be Polaris? Now, performing stunts on a four-wheeler is reckless, and that does cut both ways. I'll recognize that. It affects my client, and my client ultimately at trial would be on the jury charge for sure. But it also cuts both ways in that Polaris knows just as much as my client should know that performing stunts on a four-wheeler is going to be reckless. Polaris includes its own exhibit showing that the stunts were being performed. It admits in its briefing that that was an unreasonably dangerous sort of thing, and actually in the agreement contains language warning Bomb Squad members that the duties contained in this agreement have inherent risks of injury. So the first three elements really are not the issue. The issue and the dispute is really in the fourth and fifth element, which is whether the entrustee used the vehicle negligently and whether that negligence was a proximate cause of the injury. And the first argument is Bomb Squad wasn't using the four-wheeler. That, in fact, Donahue was using the four-wheeler. And I think there's a fact issue to the contrary. That unlike when you entrust a vehicle to an individual, you know precisely who's going to be driving that vehicle. And when you entrust it to a business, that's not necessarily true. There's going to be a number of potential users and uses of the vehicle. And in this case, Bomb Squad was using it. Mr. Moore, who was a member of Bomb Squad, invited Donahue to the Crum facility to ride these four-wheelers, told him he could earn himself a spot on the team, gave the Polaris to Donahue that morning, and asked Donahue to perform the backflip. A reasonable jury can look at these facts and say this is not just recreation. These aren't buddies out riding a four-wheeler. This is Bomb Squad evaluating new talent. That, in fact, Bomb Squad was using it. Even though Donahue was driving, Bomb Squad was using it for their business purposes. And they were using it negligently. To ask somebody to perform stunts, again, is somewhat reckless in its own right, but the evidence is that nobody asked Donahue to demonstrate that he could drive these things, could perform easier stunts, to actually figure out if he could perform something of this caliber straight off the bat, and without knowing his abilities, asking him to go straight into performing a backflip on his very first stunt, that's negligent. And that negligence did proximately cause this injury. I think foreseeability is going to be the crux in this case. And it is foreseeable in this context because you have, and it, again, this is a very odd case with very weird circumstances in that you have a business. It's not just a business. It's not just your local Exxon station driving around a truck. You have a business that's sole purpose is to perform acrobatic stunts on four-wheelers. So if you're going to entrust to that business, you're going to know a few things. First of all, you're going to know they're going to do crazy stuff on these four-wheelers. Second of all, you know this is a stunt team. So you know that just like if it were a basketball team or a rifle shooting team or whatever it is, people are going to be coming and going, and that part of operating that business is going to be evaluating new talent. From Polaris's standpoint, they should look at this situation and say, yes, we know they're going to be evaluating new talent. And so that is foreseeable. Now, there's ways they could have avoided this, for sure, one being requiring anybody who's going to get on that four-wheeler they own to sign a release saying we agree to the indemnity language in the agreement that allowed you to use this sort of four-wheeler. This could have been avoided, but Polaris, for whatever reason, went with this particular transaction, and there are consequences to transactions. Even boilerplate contracts have consequences.
So following your logic, no one should ever sell a motorcycle should have ever sold a motorcycle to Evel Knievel. Nobody should ever sell an airplane to the Air Force because a Blue Angel might fly it.
I appreciate what you're saying in your examples because they actually show the distinction in my argument. If there is a sale, that ends it. There is no negligent entrustment. The law in the state of Texas is clear. Sale ends it. But if you're going to retain ownership, you've got responsibilities. And so, again, that actually demonstrates why this very narrow situation, there is a negligent entrustment.
By Polaris.
And that if you follow through the elements of the argument or the elements of the cause of action, it fits squarely within each one of those elements. And it I would have a very difficult argument indeed because the fourth element is that Bomb Squad was negligent in using the vehicle. I have to have some evidence that Bomb Squad was negligent. If they weren't negligent, if they did everything a reasonable person would have done, then I really wouldn't have a case.
Another element is that negligence
had to be foreseeable. That the accident occurring event was foreseeable. I don't think it has to. You don't have to drill down to the exact. I think that's probably accurate. Which, I don't want to move too quickly off that point, but the foreseeability issue leads straight into the double entrustment argument as well. That, in fact, because there was a subsequent entrustment, that automatically there is, that ends the foreseeability. And that's not accurate. That you can come up with examples where a subsequent entrustment would be foreseeable. And so... That's exactly what the Schneider case that is relied on by Bombs or Polaris. That's what that case involved. And most of the times, the second entrustment would be unforeseeable. But if I were to come to you and ask you, could I borrow your car? My 11-year-old needs to drive himself to school. And you trusted that to me, you would be responsible if my 11-year-old hurt somebody, because that would be foreseeable. And the point of an absurd example like that is to say that it's not a end-all, be-all. It's not a bright-line rule. It's just like every other negligence case in that it's foreseeability. If the negligence was foreseeable, then there is liability. And for that reason, we think that each one of these facts fits squarely into the negligent entrustment theory. The second issue is the inherent risk doctrine case or argument. And they've cited either Phi Delta Theta versus Moore, which is a Justice Enoch dissent urging the adoption of a no-duty rule, that if there's a competitive sport, there's no duty ever. And asking or urging that the courts reject what is called the reckless and intentional standard. Now, in my research and preparing for this oral argument, I came across a case that I need to disclose to you, which is Monk versus Phillips, which is a it's Southwest or 983 Southwest 2nd 323. It's a Fort Worth case, and the reason it's important is because this court adopted the reckless and intentional standard. That means that this panel could not overturn that absent en banc review or Supreme Court authority. So this court, or at least this panel at this point, could not adopt that ruling or what Justice Enoch was suggesting. But even if the court were to, as en banc or in whatever role, go down the road of considering the inherent risk doctrine, the only court that's even addressed it is the Chisholm Court, or adopted is the Chisholm Court. Both sides have cited, and even in that case, there is a duty among co-participants in a sport not to injure each other with gross negligence or with intentional conduct. And that's important because it ends the analysis for purposes of this case, at least at this stage, because there wasn't a no evidence motion filed. Nobody argued that there's no evidence of gross negligence or reckless conduct in this case. What the argument was in the motion for summary judgment was there's no duty at all under this analysis by Enoch. That's not correct. There is a duty under this court's precedent, under the Chisholm Court, and therefore, even if you were to adopt that, there still could not base a summary judgment on that ground. It would have to be on a no-evidence motion after remand if we were to do that. The other thing that is important to note is that this duty wouldn't even apply to Polaris. If you look at the underlying case in the Phi Delta Theta, which was Moore versus Phi Theta Delta, just reversed the names, which is at 976 Southwest 2nd 738, the issue in that case was whether or not a sponsor would be bound by this inherent risk doctrine. And the holding was no, because the purpose of the inherent risk doctrine is it encourages vigorous competition and it protects participants who are caught in the spirit of the game, but that doesn't apply to sponsors who have time for careful reflection, as somebody in Polaris' shoes would. They are governed by ordinary negligence. The same would be true for Bomb Squad, who is evaluating a potential new talent. They had the same time for reflection and for developing standards that would prevent these injuries, hopefully. So I don't believe that standard would apply. And even so, we think, through the evidence that we've laid out in our briefing, that they would meet the gross negligence standard, even if we had to have briefed it. That this does, there was objectively very dangerous. Subjectively, they knew about it, and we would be able to meet that. I'm running out of time and don't want to go too quickly into that unless you have questions, but I do think
it's... one question.
Sure.
Did the evidence show that there had been, you know, a longstanding relationship between Polaris and H-Bomb? In other words, this practice of leasing or entrusting vehicles to them, I guess for promotional purposes, had been going on for a while?
The only evidence that I can that I know of off the top of my head is the date of the agreement itself, which was June 2007.
Okay. So why exactly are you saying that, let's make it real simple, why exactly are you saying summary judgment was improper? Because it's a fact issue? Because as a matter of law, you're not poured out?
There are two points. They've raised... They said there's no evidence, or there's no evidence on the elements, and that the inherent risk doctrine bars the claim even if there is evidence.
Mm-hmm.
There is evidence on each one of those elements, and it was foreseeable.
So they're not saying there's no fact issue.
I'm saying that there is a fact issue on each one of the elements and that the inherent risk doctrine does not apply. That there is a duty. That they did owe a duty in this context.
And your evidence that this is foreseeable to pay your negligence and trust with someone else there as well.
The evidence on foreseeability is the specific context of this very narrow type of case, which is that Polaris entrusted a vehicle to somebody they knew was going to be using that vehicle for dangerous stunts. They knew it was a sporting event and a team sport that would involve evaluation and training of these, evaluation of new talent. So every one of these steps along the way was a foreseeable. No, I don't think that was. I think it's foreseeable, but not strict liability. This agreement could have been structured in any number of ways to prevent any liability at all.
But under the agreement, as it exists, whether it's been structured some other way or not, anything that happens, they would be liable.
Only if H-bomb was negligent, because that's the fourth element. H-bomb had to be negligent in the use of the vehicle. And if H-bomb had done nothing that was negligent, if they had done everything exactly right, in evaluating this talent, there would be no liability.
But that negligence had to be foreseeable.
That's true.
And you're saying it was foreseeable because this was a reckless.
That's true. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. General. Mr. Ortega.
Good morning. May it please the court. And I need to apologize ahead of time. I lost my voice on Sunday. I'm going to carry as far as I can. If you don't mind, Jamie will pick up when I fall down.
Okay.
May I grab some water just because
sure,
it'll keep
me
going?
Sure, get it up there so you survive.
And I'm going to get a little closer to the microphone just to make sure that that y'all hear me. I think I see the gist of what has happened. Obviously, Polaris believes that the motion for summary judgment was absolutely correct and that there is no fact issue to prevent the summary judgment. What I'm understanding from counsel is that summary judgment was properly granted on several grounds. The only grounds at issue are, number one, the negligent entrustment, number two, the inherent risk doctrine. And I'll approach him in that way because I believe our request in the summary judgment was, Judge, if you do not believe summary judgment is proper on the elements, then we'll go to assumption of the risk. I certainly believe they both apply, but let me address the points raised by the appellants. The first issue, and I think I have to just say this outright, we're dealing with an adult male that elected to come down to Texas from New Jersey and backflip an ATV, not once, but twice. He obviously understood the risk involved. Anytime we elect to take on an activity and we understand the risk, that is our assumption, that is our agreement to take on the inherent risks. And in this instance, I think I first want to look at the elements because I disagree that the elements 1 through 5 are not all at issue. I'm sorry. I've got one in my pocket, but I'll swallow it. First of all, the entrustment of a vehicle by the owner. Polaris, in this sense, that there was no evidence for sure that Mr. Donahue was riding a Polaris vehicle, but we are assuming for purposes of summary judgment that we own the vehicle. Number two, to an unlicensed, incompetent, or reckless driver. I think that becomes critically important at the end of the analysis because whoever entrusted the vehicle to Mr. Donahue, typically the entrustment goes from someone, say me, to somebody else, that then injures a third party. In this instance, there's an entrustment to Mr. Donahue who injures himself. He is automatically admitting that he is an unsafe, reckless driver.
And are you saying these stuntmen they can acquire licenses to perform these stunts? Is there anything in the record to show that?
No, ma'am. They are not. You don't have a special license any more than it's not like a CDL, for example.
Okay.
These are trained individuals, and I think that's a great distinction that's made, because we are not just giving the Polaris vehicles to a group of kids to go out and ride stunts. We specifically contracted with Bomb Squad, one of the foremost leading group of riders in the world. These people train tirelessly here in Denton. As a matter of fact, several of them are at the X Games right now, and they backflip, not only four-wheelers, but snowmobiles. They do things that I wouldn't do. But it doesn't mean that the activities of Bomb Squad are necessarily reckless. To that group, they're dangerous. That's what they train for. If I were to take off this suit and go try to play football for a day with the Dallas Cowboys, that would be reckless. However, if I were 20 years younger and I train and I have the athletic ability and I have the speed to go play for the Dallas Cowboys, that may be dangerous, but it's not reckless. And that distinction is one that we made at the summary judgment hearing. We did not admit that H-Bomb or Bomb Squad's conduct was reckless. Instead, when we contracted that you guys are doing stuff that's dangerous. You will indemnify us for anything that happens because we understand it's dangerous and you can't come back to us. The third element is that the entrustment of the vehicle was to someone that Polaris knew or should have known to be unlicensed, incompetent, or reckless. In this case, there is no way that Polaris could have known or foreseen that Mr. Donahue was going to attempt two backflips on an ATV when he claims to have had no experience. And what the appellants have done is they've blurred that line of entrustment that is so clearly distinguished in the Espinoza case, Snyder versus Espinoza. And in our brief, we talk about three layers of entrustment. And the more I read this last night, the more I realized there's four layers in this case. This is the Espinoza case with an extra layer. Polaris entrusted and contracted its vehicles to H-Bomb, Bomb Squad. Bomb Squad then entrusts its vehicles to its riders. Caleb Moore is not Bomb Squad. Caleb Moore is just an employee of Bomb Squad. Wes Miller, the owner, maybe, but not Caleb Moore. So Polaris to H-Bomb to Caleb Moore, now to Mr. Donahue. That's four layers. If the appellants are going to question anyone's entrustment, it should be Bomb Squad or H-Bomb's entrustment of the vehicle to Caleb Moore, who then entrusted it to Mr. Donahue. And I hope I'm not confusing the issue, but last night I realized there's an extra layer there. Yet everyone wants for Polaris to be the insurer of another company, H-Bomb or Bomb Squad, which is absolutely not proper.
Okay, what was the purpose of providing these ATVs to Bomb Squad?
It's actually fourfold. Number one, may I read it? Yes, ma'am. Several things that Polaris asked Bomb Squad to do. Number one, to promote ATV products and provide feedback in regard to the products. In other words, when they ride a Polaris vehicle and you see it in the X Games, that is a promotion of Polaris product. They provide rider feedback. These ladies and men are doing things on these vehicles that normal users do not do because they are trained to do that. So I may be sued down the line as Polaris for a broken A-arm, an arm that connects the tires to the vehicle. And someone may say that A-arm only takes 10 pounds of force. Well, I know because of H-Bomb's riding that they can backflip that and land a four-wheeler down with close to 5,000 pounds of force. That's feedback that is used. It's information about riding that is used. Also, for comments on the product as far as what we would or would not maybe change, seating positions, what have you. So there were several reasons for giving the product to H-Bomb and Bomb Squad.
All right, to promote Polaris and provide feedback.
To endorse, promote, race, film, and test is the exact language, I'm sorry. To endorse, promote, race, film, and test.
And allowing people to, who were not members of Bomb Squad, to use it to audition or whatever for Bomb Squad, was that contemplated in your agreement?
No, ma'am, because that, no, ma'am, because Polaris does not run Bomb Squad or H-Bomb. They are two entirely, or actually three entirely separate entities. We do not control H-Bomb or Bomb Squad. We did not want to control them. They run their business. They are a professional outfit of the world's best riders. Polaris did not want and does not want any say in how it runs its business.
But you provided the ATVs.
Yes, ma'am.
You didn't sell them to them, you just provided them to them.
They were actually sold. It's just that title had not yet passed. The terms of the sale were, if you complete your end of the bargain, the vehicles are yours as of January the next year. So they actually were sold for consideration. We are just, for purpose of this argument, assuming that title had not passed, and we're not disputing that.
What's the consideration?
There's several tiers. They had to show up at a number of shows. They had to do a certain number of performances or races. It's contractually set out, the consideration by H-Bomb and Bomb Squad. But it would be no difference, different justice than Ford providing a car to a NASCAR driver and allowing that NASCAR driver to do what he does. In his opinion, that is not a reckless activity by any means. It may be dangerous.
Test drives?
Test drives included, because they test drive for new drivers. But that team, not Ford, controls who is hired on the team for drivers. Well, of course, because Ford, Chevrolet, Honda, Yamaha, whomever is providing vehicles for whatever we may believe in this room is dangerous, knows that that team is the best equipped to hire its drivers. And everyone nowadays wants to be a NASCAR. A lot of people want to be NASCAR drivers. Are they qualified? That's not for Ford, Chevy, or anyone else to decide. It's for the team. And there are teams that are owned specifically to bring in, test, and hire new drivers. Same as with Polaris in this case. Polaris is a totally separate entity. We just said, here are the vehicles. You do these things with it. If you're going to hire new drivers, that's your business. We don't know how to train and do that. There's no evidence to support what the appellants argued. They merely said the difference here is that we did not sell and transfer title immediately to the Bomb Squad. And appellant's argument was, in Nike's situation, for example, Nike gave the shoes or Ford gives the car. Now, I represent other manufacturers. I happen to know that not all deals are structured the same. There are other deals structured like this. Why? Because there is consideration to be afforded. Snowboard manufacturers, wakeboard manufacturers, ski manufacturers, boats, things of that nature. There was no evidence to suggest that Polaris is standing on an island of its own, really because it's irrelevant. We didn't control the vehicle. We were just one of a four-link chain. Once we entrusted that vehicle to Bomb Squad as a corporation, we don't then control the vehicles. We had no control of it because we contracted out of that control. Yes, for negligent entrustment especially. There is no duty as ruled on in Schneider versus Esperanza, which is the exact same situation where you have a company that entrusted a vehicle to one of its employees, that entrusted a vehicle to a third party who then went out and injured somebody else.
Well, you're saying factually that's different, because that was not correct.
to operate, which is exactly right. In this case, H-Bomb and appellants are, again, blurring the line a little bit. They want to say that H-Bomb was using the vehicle. They weren't using the vehicle. H-Bomb, in this instance, you have to look at who's riding the vehicle. H-Bomb gives the vehicle to Caleb Moore to ride, one of its employees and someone that they know is the best rider in the world. Now, they can also go out and try to hire and test other individuals to ride, but that's that company's business. It's not Polaris's. Is it foreseeable when Avis leases a car to a company that any number of individuals in the company are going to use it? Sure. But it is incumbent upon the company to make sure that it is entrusting its vehicles to people that are competent, people that have the ability to ride. And in this case, we absolutely specifically contracted away from that. And I see the yellow light coming on. If you want me to continue, I can, or I can address the inherent risk.
Just wrap up, please.
Sure. The inherent risk doctrine, I don't know of a case that is better suited, because you're not looking at the conduct of Polaris. You're looking at the conduct of Mr. Donahue. And again, an adult individual that comes down and opts freely to backflip a vehicle. And again, I think it's critical to understand, the first time he did this, he goes up a ramp into a foam-filled pit and he kicks off the vehicle. He landed fine, safe. He got back on that vehicle to do it again. He assumed the risk to get on and try it again. The second time he did it is when the accident happened. There is no clearer definition of inherent risk or the assumption of the risk than this particular case. And I think it falls squarely in what we've discussed in our brief. But come to the end of the day, I think if I'm just speaking clearly to the summary judgment that was granted and what we believe is the basis, is that there is no duty for Polaris over Mr. Donahue. There are layers that are clearly defined by the Texas Supreme Court, and it could not be foreseeable that Mr. Donahue was going to come in and elect to do something that he believed was not safe.
All right, thank you, Mr. Ortega.
Thank you.
Mr. Durham, you've got
all. I found something we agree on. Not all deals are structured the same. This deal could have been structured in any number of ways. And there are different reasons a manufacturer will go with different deals. In the example we gave, some businesses will buy a business with a merger. Some will use an asset purchase. But there are benefits and detriments to each one, and there are responsibilities for each type of deal. And in this case, this was not a sale. If you look at page 42 in the record, paragraph 2, it says, Polaris shall allow H-Bomb to use the 9-2008 Outlaw ATVs at no charge. That's not a sale. That's allowing them to use during the terms of the agreement, and that is an entrustment. This could have been avoided, could have given the ATVs, could have sold them outright, or could have just given them a bunch of money and said, if you want to buy yourself a Polaris ATV, knock yourself out, but when you're driving under this agreement, you're going to be riding Polaris ATVs. We would have avoided this situation entirely. This arrangement could have been done in a way to avoid liability, but they had reasons for the way they did it, whether it was control of the vehicle or whatever it was. They had those reasons. They wanted to retain ownership, and retention of ownership has responsibilities. That responsibility includes not entrusting it to anybody without any limitations for something that's foreseeable to happen. Clearly, Mr. Donahue assumed risk. There's no question. That goes on the jury's question form, and his name will be there, and the jury will have to evaluate that. But he does deserve his day in court, and summary judgment should not have been granted. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Durham. Thank you, Ms. Ortega. And other counsel, we appreciate you being here today. We appreciate your arguments and your briefing as well. Your case is now submitted. That being our only case on our 10:30 docket, we will now adjourn.